Today on New Horizons, Deanne Stillman, author of Mustang, The Saga of the Wild Horse in the American West.
From 1900 to the time Wild Horse Annie came along, there was a reduction of nearly 2 million horses. It's difficult to believe that these public lands can support that many cows, but there's a problem in 20,000-some horses. It just doesn't make sense. It's kind of odd that any agency feels so bad for wildlife that they have to round them up and kill them. I just don't buy it.
I'm Bob Kustra, president of Boise State University. Welcome to New Horizons. Deanne Stillman is a critically acclaimed author and journalist. Her latest book, Mustang, The Saga of the Wild Horse in the American West, was published earlier this year. 10 years in the making, Mustang provides a fascinating perspective on America's wild horses. Among the questions the book explores is why America, the cowboy nation, has seemingly turned its back on one of its most important former partners. Idaho is home to 6 wild horse herds, including herds in the Owyhee Mountains and in the Challis area. Here at Boise State, our mascot, the Bronco, pays homage to these icons of the American West. Deanne Stillman is also the author of 29 Palms, a true story of murder, Marines, and the Mojave, and Joshua Tree, Desolation Tango. She has written for publications ranging from Rolling Stone to the New York Times. Her plays have won prizes at major theater festivals around the country. Originally from Ohio, Ms. Stillman divides her time between New York and Los Angeles. Today she joins us on the phone from her home in California. Deanne Stillman, welcome to New Horizons.
Hey, thanks so much, Bob. I'm really excited to talk with you.
Well, I was excited to read your book, as I was just explaining to you before the show. I had the opportunity to pick it up over in Jackson Hole. Found it fascinating, and it is, in a sense, ripped from the headlines because in the last few weeks there's been a report of the feds considering euthanizing wild horses, and that certainly is controversial. Then, with increasing hay costs, there's been a number of reports of how difficult it is for horse rescuers these days and folks letting their horses loose on the range. We're going to talk about all those things, but we should probably begin with the basics. Our listeners, if they didn't know before, know now that Idaho has wild horses in the Owyhees and in the Challis area, but help us with the larger perspective. Where do we find wild horses in the American West? How many of them are there?
Wild horses are living in the 11 western states on public lands. And as I found out during the course of my research, there are maybe 23, 25,000 Mustangs left on the range today. At the turn of the 20th century, there were 2 million wild horses on the range at that time. Over the years, obviously, their populations have been greatly reduced. In 1971, the first federal protections for the wild horse went into place under the Wild Free Roaming Horse and Burro Act, and that was brought about by an amazing character named Wild Horse Annie,
right,
who was a Nevada native, and one morning on her way to work in 1950, and she was a secretary, and she was wearing her customary pillbox hat and suit and gloves. She saw blood spilling out of a truck and was shocked, and she decided to follow it, and she tracked it down a desert highway to a slaughterhouse where she saw injured and dying Mustangs being offloaded at this rendering plant. And she realized that all these stories she had been hearing in Nevada as she was growing up about cruel Mustang hunts and so on were all true. And it stopped her in her tracks. And from then on, she spent the next 20 years battling for these protections and winning them 4 times on 4 different levels. And finally, in 1971, this bill was passed and Richard Nixon signed the law, which may surprise a lot of people. He was a great friend to the wild horse, and he at the signing ceremony in the Rose Garden, he quoted Thoreau when he signed the bill, and I documented the ceremony and his speech in my book, and it was one of the things I was quite surprised to find out, because we generally don't remember Richard Nixon this way, but in terms of the past four or five presidential administrations, he's been the wild horse's greatest friend.
Well, with this book, in a sense, you're a 21st century wild horse, Annie, because you were drawn to this book, to the subject anyway, by an incident that happened in Reno, as I remember.
That's right. I was finishing up my previous book, 29 Palms, which was about two girls killed by a Marine in that military town, 29 Palms, about 3 hours east of Los Angeles. And that incident had happened after the Gulf War. And I was waiting to meet with a source in a desert bar. This was in 1998, 10 years ago. And I picked up a local paper and read a story about six wild horses that had been gunned down outside Reno at Christmas time. And I was quite shocked, of course, you know, because I immediately thought, well, you know, why would somebody kill such beautiful animals? And I knew that I had grown up around horses. My mother was one of the first women in the country to ride professionally on the racetrack as an exercise boy. And I had been riding all my life and knew a little bit about our wild horse populations, but I didn't know there were wild horses living outside Reno, so I was quite struck by the story. And then a couple of days later, there was another item in the paper saying that 12 horse carcasses had been found, and then by the end of the year, on New Year's Eve, 34 carcasses had been found outside Reno. And I was just completely horrified, and then it went from there. A few days later, there was an arrest, and two of the three accused were Marines, and one of them was stationed at 29 Palms. So a lot of things came together for me at that point, and I knew that the Wild Horse story would be my next book, and that's when I embarked on the Mustang Trail. And, you know, here we are 10 years later. This is the 10-year anniversary of that massacre outside Reno, and over the years I've discovered so many amazing things and met so many incredible people all over the West, including the two women who rescued the survivor of that massacre, a filly who was discovered a couple of months after her family had been killed in the Virginia Range. She had been discovered lying down in a gully near the massacre site, and her mother had been killed in that incident, and she was dying of starvation, and a hiker had spotted her and called for help. And these two women, Bobby Royal and Betty Lee Kelly, who run a wild horse sanctuary in Carson City, were called, and as they often are, when Mustangs are in trouble, and they went out and rescued her and were able to bring her back to health over time. And I went and visited Bugs a few weeks ago in Nevada, and she's doing fine. She's 10 years old, and she's the most beautiful and spirited Mustang, and she's just an incredibly inspiring character.
For those who travel the West and who would like to see a herd or normally see nature up close and personal, is it possible to see the wild horse in its native habitat? Is there accessibility for observation in any of these habitats across the West?
Well, they're hard to get to. Some are more easily accessible than others. There's the Pryor Mountain herd in Montana, mm-hmm. which is one of the last of the, it is the last wild horse herd in Montana, and there are about maybe a little over 100 left at this point, and they're scheduled for a possible further reduction later this year. But they live in the Pryor Mountain Range outside Billings. And, you can get into these places on foot or with four-wheel drive and so on, and they're one of the most, they're a frequently visited herd. There are, as you mentioned, herds in Idaho, in the Owyhee Desert and Challis, and I do know that people have gone to see them, but their ranges aren't like zoos or anything where you can just sort of like drive up and get out and see them hanging out behind a fence or anything, because they don't live, you know, their turf is not fenced in. They live in what the BLM, the agency that manages most of our wild horse herds, call, they live in HAs or herd areas, and there are about a couple of hundred of these herd areas left across the West. And as I say, you can see them if you're driving around and, you know, in those areas. There is the Virginia Range outside Reno where the horses are now surrounded on all sides by freeway and live fairly close to, you know, certain communities and often range into town and into people's yards and so on, to the dismay of some people and the delight of many others. And you can often see them on the back roads up in the Virginia Range.
Now, I don't know how to ask this next question because it deals with the lineage of the wild horse. And I know you can go all the way back to the Spanish who brought the horse into the West, but I thought I read somewhere in your book where you described the wild horses who are alive on the range today as being the descendants of horses that were freed years ago by Westerners in an earlier time.
Right. Well, the question of wild horse lineage is really interesting, and it's something that I explore in my book. Some people still refer to them as feral, but really the wild horse is native reintroduced wildlife. Maybe the most amazing thing that I found out during the course of my research is that the horse is North America's gift to the world. It originated on this continent 55 million years ago, and it was the size of a fox terrier, which is hard to believe. But over time, it, of course, got bigger and faster and evolved into the fleet, big-hearted athlete of the plains that we know it as today. It was heading north during the course of its evolution across the Bering Land Bridge. And during the Ice Age, it went extinct here, but had populated the rest of the world. And it returned in the 1500s with conquistadors. And the first chapter in my book, The Horse's Return, tells the story of Hernando Cortez and the 16 horses of the conquest. Those were the first horses that opened up the New World and helped the Spanish conquer the Aztecs. And when I went back into the archives, I found incredible records which named the horses and talked about their personalities and described them and talked about what happened to each one on the march into the jungles of Mexico. It was really an amazing story. By the time the conquest was over, Cortez said, "We owe it all to God and the horse," which is an amazing statement. And of course, those horses became the foundation stock for the wild horses of today. And a lot of the herds, a lot of the horses in the West are direct descendants of the horses that came with the Spanish, and they've been linked by DNA. And you can identify those horses by way of a dorsal stripe down their backs. Some of the herds are also mixed with, you know, escaped cow ponies and cavalry horses and so on. But as I mentioned, they are protected under this 1971 law, which says that wild horses are to be considered in the range where they were found at the time that bill went into effect.
You know, you have been very kind to Richard Nixon, kinder than some people have been regarding other aspects of his presidency.
Right.
But on the other hand, you've been very tough on our current president. I'm looking at a quote here that says, "In the old days, horse thieves were lynched. Now they're running the government." What happened in the course of these years since the 1971 law, and if you could also comment on the 2005 rider that Senator Conrad Burns of Montana introduced. I think that granted the BLM the sale authority and Mustangs could be sold to slaughterhouses. But if you could just put this all in perspective for us, what is it about the Bush administration today that waters down the original 1971 law?
Well, after the bill went into effect, the cattle industry had moved to consolidate its power in government for years, for decades, actually. Big ranching outfits have sought to purge the Mustang from ranges across the West because they regard the wild horse as an animal that steals food from cows, and in fact, some people in the West refer to wild horses as thieves and varmints and so on. When the law went into effect, there were a series of legal challenges brought by livestock lobbies and individual states in the West. seeking to contest the law and return control of wild horse populations to local communities and so on. I just wanted to get back to Idaho for a minute because 3 years after the law went into effect, there was a very infamous incident called the Howe Massacre of 32 wild horses in Howe, Idaho, and that was considered a test case of the law because they were federally protected at that point. And there was it was widely covered, and reporters flocked to Idaho from the East Coast and West Coast and covered the story, and Wild Horse Annie came in and so on, and it was a horrifying story. The case fell apart over time, as these cases often do, and charges were never brought, even though that law made it a felony to kill a wild horse on public lands. But back to your question of the Bush administration, ever since Richard Nixon, there has been a move to take down the 1971 law, and these moves have escalated over the years. Some people estimate that as many as 30,000 wild horses fell through the BLM cracks under the Clinton years, and things have reached a crescendo under Bush, our so-called cowboy president from Texas. And incidentally, Texas has no wild horses left, and it's a state that runs pretty much entirely on Mustang mojo, and even Bush himself has a painting of a wild horse in the Oval Office, a cowboy riding this horse down a hill carrying a message, and I think the painting is called A Charge to Keep, and Bush often cites it in his speeches. And various lobbies have really become entrenched under the Bush administration, and as you and a lot of your listeners probably know, these lobbies, you know, gas and oil and cattle and so on, have really made a move to take over public lands during the past 8 years, and there's been a sell-off of public lands under the Bush administration. In 2005, as you mentioned, former Montana Senator Conrad Burns attached a rider to that year's spending bill in which he called for the sale of wild horses over 10 or that hadn't been adopted on the third try through the BLM's Adopt-a-Horse program to be sold to the lowest bidder, which meant that they could be sold to the slaughterhouse. And immediately after it passed, a number of horses were sent right away to the slaughterhouse, and a grassroots campaign erupted right away. And during the following year, there was some legislation passed which shut down the country's three foreign-owned horse slaughter plants, but there are still plants in Canada and Mexico, and horses are still being shipped out of the country to these plants. And it isn't just wild horses that might be falling through the cracks on this. Now it's domestic horses which are being shipped out of the country for slaughter.
You're listening to Deanne Stillman. She is talking about her book, Mustang, The Saga of the Wild Horse in the American West. I noticed one place in your book, Deanne, when you were talking about the political power. You referred to a West Virginia congressman. He came to the rescue in some fashion during these legislative battles. So I guess the question is, I'm curious, where in the West do you go, either in the U.S. House of Representatives or the U.S. Senate, to find a friend of the Mustang today? Is there?
That's a really good question, Bob, and actually there is one. Representative Raul Grijalva of Arizona, who's the chairman of the House Subcommittee on National Parks and Public Lands, I think it's called. At any rate, he has joined with Representative Nick Rahal in calling for a GAO investigation of the BLM's Wild Horse and Burro Management Program, and that investigation is underway. The GAO is supposed to announce its findings in September, and he and Nick Rahal also sent and signed a letter last week protesting this latest announcement by BLM to possibly euthanize so-called excess wild horses. So Representative Grijalva is, I think, our only representative in the West who's really gone out on a limb and taken a stand on behalf of our great partner, the wild horse.
I mentioned to someone just the other day that I was going to be interviewing you, and they were familiar with the proposal of the BLM to euthanize wild horses. And the first reaction that they asked was, well, is she in favor of euthanizing wild horses? And I said, well, I really doubt it. I guess I'll find that out on the air, but there certainly doesn't seem to be anything in her book which suggests that she would be. And she said, well, the alternative, of course, is that they die of starvation, which I guess is, throughout your book, I think you point to the fact that that's been a defense used many times. In the article, the Associated Press article, talking about the Fed's consideration of euthanizing wild horses, it quotes a gentleman, Chris Hyde, I guess his name is, if I pronounce that right, from the Animal Welfare Institute, as saying that the proposal for killing horses is really about an agency whose reckless management has caused immeasurable harm. Help us get to the bottom of what is it about the BLM that causes the Animal Welfare Institute to charge reckless management, and what needs to be done to prevent getting us to the point where wild horses are euthanized.
Well, I can't really speak on behalf for the Animal Welfare Institute or any other organizations. I can really only, you know, speak for me and,
sure,
and hopefully the wild horse as well. The argument that wild horses will starve if they're not euthanized is bizarre, because wild animals starve all the time on the range. That's life in the wilderness, and it's tough out there. It's kind of odd that suddenly a federal agency or any agency feels so bad for wildlife that they have to round them up and kill them. I just don't buy it. Also, the euthanasia proposal is based on the idea that there are excess horses. Unfortunately, studies of wild horses on their various ranges are often out of date, and the way that the BLM and other agencies come up with how many horses are to be removed every year is range studies. And the question they ask is, you know, how many wild horses can the range carry, how many cows and how many sheep, and so on. And they call that number AMLs, or appropriate management levels. As I mentioned, these AMLs are not up to date in every herd management area, and that's one of the reasons that Representative Ray Hall and Grijalva asked the GAO to investigate BLM's management. Now we have a situation where, because these AMLs keep shifting and aren't always up to date, so many wild horses have been removed in recent years that there are now more Mustangs in federal housing than there are on the range. A number of these horses shouldn't have been taken out of their homes in the first place, but they're referred to now as excess. I think if you take a look at the numbers, take a look at what's going on in terms of cattle and horses on the range, there are at least 3 million cattle on public lands in the West, and it's difficult to believe that these public lands can support that many cows, but there's a problem in 20,000 some horses. It just doesn't make sense. And also, cows are not removed when during times of drought, and they're certainly not wildlife, but they're the animals that people say wild horses are stealing food from. And if there's not enough water on the range, why aren't other animals taken off? And it's just very bizarre.
Staying on this issue of the solution,
mm-hmm,
you quote or mention Lucy Dalton, the president of the Let 'Em Run Foundation, and mention her efforts stepping up birth control. I guess she's advocating stepping up birth control,
uh-huh,
and tax breaks to large owners willing to accommodate these wild horses on their properties. Are those realistic proposals that if the BLM took more seriously and had a better program? I mean, I don't begin to understand how effective the birth control programs are. I assume these would be done by air, or is that what they're doing here?
No, there are birth control programs being carried out in certain herds. There's something called PZP, which is contraception used on mares, And some of the mares, you know, once they're taken in various roundups, are injected with PZP and then released back into the range. And I don't know what the figures are. I could put you in touch with, you know, wild horse scientists who study these things. But, I mean, evidently it has been used effectively in some places. I'm not entirely familiar with everything that Lacey Dalton said. I know that people are talking about tax breaks and so on for private citizens who might take care of wild horses, but, you know, there are private citizens who run wild horse sanctuaries all over the country and who've stepped up on their own dime to deal with this huge problem that's just getting bigger and bigger all the time. And they need donations, and so so it is happening. I think it would be a mistake to turn the management of our wild horse populations over to private citizens, because look what happened before Wild Horse Annie came along. From 1900 to the time Wild Horse Annie came along, there was a reduction of nearly 2 million horses. When the law went into effect in 71, there were maybe 50,000 wild horses on the range. Think about that quick reduction. Now we're at a point where after eons of survival, I mean, wild horses, you know, as I said, originated on this continent. They went elsewhere. They returned. Half of them didn't survive the Atlantic crossings with conquistadors, and the Spanish would throw them overboard into a part of the Atlantic that became known as the horse latitudes. That's where the ships were becalmed, and the sailors would have to lighten their loads. But yet still, a number of horses did survive those crossings and went on to serve in our wars on the frontier. I mean, look, let's face it, no wild horse, no America. I mean, horses, there wouldn't have been cattle drives. That right. just wouldn't have happened. No Buffalo Bill. And our own identity as Americans, who would we be without the wild horse? I mean, I really think the wild horse is us. And it's, as I said, it's gone through these amazing eons of endurance and service, but here it is, really, I think, making its last stand right now in the American West.
Well, you've said it in a very articulate fashion, and I must say that I really enjoyed the book. I was somewhat frustrated in reading the book because I kept asking the question, what can I do? And for our listeners who want to go from here, the first thing they have to do is buy your book. And then I know you close the book telling the reader that you're really calling with this book for a temporary moratorium on wild horse roundups until further studies can be done, more data can be gathered. And I would assume if there is one thing readers and listeners can do, it's to let their public officials know that they feel it is important that this temporary moratorium be applied. Would that sum up your feelings at this time? And again, I'm running out of time, so I have to make this
sure.
rather quick.
You know, I think that would be great. And also, I would just hope that people understand that this is our heritage at stake here. I mean, here we are fighting a war in Iraq, and the question of freedom is on everybody's minds. But what does it say about us if we aren't able to preserve the greatest icon of freedom that there ever was?
Well put. Deanne Stillman, thank you for joining us today on New Horizons.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
The author of Mustang, The Saga of the Wild Horse in the American West. Next week, Bob Olson, a longtime tour guide at Idaho's Old Penitentiary, talking about the prison's history and lore. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones, research provided by Kathleen Craven. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Custra. Please join me next week as we talk to the people who help shape our world in both the Treasure Valley and beyond on New Horizons.